All right. That is not music you just relax to. It's music meant to wake you up. It's Duke Ellington, Charles Mingus, and Max Roach with a collaborative number called Money Jungle. It's a very political piece, and it's the kind of music that you listen to in order to get the messages that they have musically created. Ellington, of course, is on piano, Mingus is on bass, and Roach is on drums. This was recorded and released in 1962. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're going to have a discussion. No doubt you've been following what's going on with regard to this election, whatever that is. And we want to take a kind of long view backwards. We're looking back from the time this campaign began in earnest until now and beyond now, as the election is held and we will find all the fallout from the election that is worthy or will be worthy of close scrutiny and study. And today, I thought we would look at something that is not really discussed in terms of both Trump and Joe Biden. I want to ask you to think about how Donald Trump and Joe Biden have used race for political advantage in their respective presidential campaigns. Do you think they were helped or hindered by it so far? Has it achieved or is it achieving the larger objectives, such as building or consolidating their base of support? Why is it that we tend to think of Trump more as a racist and Biden as a cool guy, as an enlightened man who is not racist at all? Why do we think that? So that's the question I'm posing to you today. How have Donald Trump and Joe Biden used race for political advantage in their respective presidential campaigns? As you know, the craziness in Washington continues today, where there will be efforts to overturn the election, and tomorrow to overturn the election. It's a mad time. And we can just dismiss it as, you know, the craziness of the Republican Party. But I'm not exempting the Democratic Party either. The Democratic Party has a lot, meaning Biden and his campaign. There's a lot to be studied here in how race was used and continues to be used to galvanize support that he did not, one would argue, did not necessarily earn. So there we are. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. How have both Donald Trump and Joe Biden used race for political advantage in their presidential campaigns? I'm expecting you to cite something to bolster your opinion or your point of view. whichever way it falls. But I don't want to hear, we are way past the time when you could say, I think this and I think that. You've had enough exposure to things that should be part of your library, that you've put in your library, that help you make a point, the point that you will be explaining to us today. 888-874-4888. Do you think you can help us understand and analyze how it is that although the media coverage is tilting definitely against Trump on the issue of race, it is being very kind to Biden on the same issue? How is that? How did that work out? How does that become the case? And is it to let us know that in Trump and in Biden, if you do a comparative analysis, we are to look automatically at Trump as really a disgusting creature and Biden as a very nice, mellow guy who wants the best for America? It has to do with race. It has to do with how people position themselves with regard to this permanent flaw in American society. 888-874-4888. I don't see anybody yet, but we should get to you as soon as you call in. It is very important not to miss this particular aspect of the campaign, because we are, in the end, all of us, in one way or the other, are manipulated to think this or to think that, but we are manipulated. The thing that helped greatly in this race was race. All the things predicated on it, all the things that were reported, and you see the thread running through, all the way through. It may be about, you know, challenging the count. It may be about positions on particular issues, but the race question never left. And in the case of Biden, it was never really exploited. It was never really explained that he had some accounting to do with respect to race, and still does have some accounting to do, but he's been let off the hook. How did that happen? And how will the entire election, how is the entire election affected by that? 888-874-4888. Jeremiah from Harlem, you start us off today.
Hi, Trees.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yeah,
I think this is a great topic, first of all. I made comments on this program basically saying, you know, I share in the opinion that Donald Trump is just this terrible, miserable person in what he represents and what he aspires for politically. But then, likewise, I would turn around and say, and Joe Biden is your alternative? So I just found that so many people were so riled up saying, well, now we have to go with Biden, and Biden is the best bad, and he's not so bad. And I think he's quite terrible. And, you know, I knew he had a connection with Strom Thurmond, but then as I looked into it, he seemed to have deeply segregationist roots. I believe it was on Gary's program that a guest was describing that the Democratic Party over a period was a link between sort of northern liberal elitists and southern openly racist elitists, as epitomized by John F. Kennedy's presidency and his, you know, union with LBJ. And that's that sort of cultural, cross-cultural link within the Democratic Party that I was not aware of. But then as we look into it, well, Joe Biden was a major figurehead in that. And of course, he's made a lot of awkward comments, even on the campaign trail, that were, you know, equivalent to when Trump said, basically, well, what do you have to lose? I mean, Biden's produced equally offensive and disconnected comments. But what I find to be the most racist, which I don't find discussed at all, is our policy around the world towards non-white people. Like, one reason why I cannot support the Democratic Party any longer, and I'll dedicate a portion of my life to trying to build up third-party politics over the next 4 years, is because I just cannot agree with the average Democrat in regard to the seriousness of the crimes committed on the Democratic watch. Like, for example, Bill Clinton, you know, he entered the office with a 1 million prison population, and then it was doubled, mostly black and brown people who were being incarcerated, harsher policing, harsher sentencing, et cetera. I mean, that's an actual atrocity against our community. Or the invasion of Libya under Obama. I'm really disturbed that those, what I consider to be racist atrocities, are just not intellectually dealt with at all by the average liberal Democrat who's so content in their lesser of two evils choice.
All right. I want to bring you back to the issue of Biden getting something of a free pass here, not being closely scrutinized. And in what strategic ways has he used race to blunt the edge against him?
Well, I don't think it was his choice to be strategic, honestly. I think he's connected with the Obama legacy. And the Obama legacy means so much to the black community, and the black population, I should say, in this country, that he basically got a free pass. It's kind of like if you're a Chicago Bulls fan and Michael Jordan retires, well, you still root for Scottie Pippen. And that's the same thing here. It's like, okay, well, Jordan's not on the court, Obama, but okay, we root for the guy who was his teammate. And it's just a connection of that legacy. It's almost like, to me, I look at, if Trump had won, it would have undermined the historic legacy of Obama, just from a superficial historic point of view. Whereas with showing support for Biden, it's, oh, okay, we secured the Obama legacy. We secured it. We didn't go racist or openly racist 2 times in a row.
In that regard, how do you rate the strategic move of having a woman of color as vice presidential candidate?
It seems to have been quite effective. I mean, you know, I'm not sure what I would have said before the selection. I would say, well, that's an interesting idea, and I think it would have had some traction, but it's turned out to be very effective, I think. And, you know, to me, and I hate to say this, I mean, but I don't know any other way to say it, to me, a lot of these people, whether regardless of their skin tone, are very white-minded. And, you know, to me, and I put a lot of people in that category, even people who are considered, you know, progressives within the party, they always have to attach this sort of American mythology to the discussion, where they say, well, this is a country of freedom. And, well, no, not particularly, not historically. This is a land of opportunity. Well, not for most of the average working class people at this point. No, it's not. But they always have to, you know, do this kind of rah-rah. We all believe in the same thing, but we don't. You know, I don't uphold the Supreme Court, for example, or these other institutions. So, you know, picking a woman of color, that's fine, but someone who operates very well within the system.
But then I want you to switch to the other side. Wasn't Trump, or hasn't Trump been very effective on the same question of race and how he used it to consolidate his base?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of people who seem who are just alienated from the politically correct culture. And they might be missing some points, but then they also might have some valid points. You know, I remember from one of the debates, a discussion about where Trump made some comment to the effect of like, yeah, all this sensitivity training and all this stuff is crap. And maybe that's true. I think, like they say, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day. And Trump had his broken clock being right moments on several occasions, including during the debate where he said to Biden, you've been terrible for the black community. And Biden didn't exactly respond to that. He just kind of let it slide because it's true. So I think it's interesting to me that some people perceive Trump as this horribly divisive racist. And I think he is quite racist. I think there's just a lit from him even making a racist remark when they were giving an award to the Native American Code Talkers. He made some stupid comment about Pocahontas, or when he started his presidential campaign and he said that Mexico is sending over their worst murderers and rapists. And the really offensive part was the next comment he made where he said, and I assume some of them are good people. Like, that was a dividing line. I think some people perceive that, like myself, to be just a really deeply racist thing to do. And others, oh, well, he's just, it's true, you know. And they don't realize how offensive that is and how dangerous that is to paint an entire group of people in that way. But then over time, a lot of people of color, a surprising number of people of color, I observed, started to support Trump. And I was surprised by that. But they were completely alienated from the Democratic Party more than anything. It wasn't out of, you know, I know a black woman friend of mine in Atlanta, Georgia, a very successful woman, very intelligent woman. And to my surprise, she was supporting Trump. And she, well, I don't necessarily agree with her. She made a surprisingly good argument for Trump as the lesser of two evils. And Trump also himself made a fairly compelling case talking about just the horrible track record of Democrats in major American cities. And I don't know if Republicans would have done any better. I really doubt it. But the
politics
Democratic track record in major cities is not.
Realities for you. That's for sure. Thank you so much, Jeremiah, for your very enlightening analysis and the joy of listening to you as the first caller today. You gave us some inspiration. Thank you. Randy from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, Nutrice. How are you? Happy New Year to you. And the.
Thank you, Randy. Same to you. Now, how do you explain this phenomenon? From your vantage point, how do you see it? How have Donald Trump and Joe Biden used race for political advantage in their presidential campaigns?
Well, I have a different take on it to just get to your question. I feel that this is just a continuation of the same divide and conquer political paradigm to keep the masses opposed to each other and not seeing their common interests or advocating for their common agenda in terms of their quality of life. The political system is designed to pander to people's self-interest, and the race card in this regard has been played by both Trump and Biden.
Okay, so get us to the point of understanding how it is that they both have used race as a strategy for getting to wherever they are right now in their respective campaigns.
The gentleman that just spoke prior to me said that, you know, it was interesting that Biden picked a woman of color to be his running mate. Biden had made the statement as is advertised in some of Donald Trump's campaign material, that Biden claimed that if you didn't vote for him, you weren't black. Now, you know, so if you consider yourself to be African-American and uphold, you know, the cause of trying to see the Democrats as being the savior of black people. I'm just, you know, with quotes around it. I don't really feel that way, but a lot of people feel that Democrats have more of the more of a empathetic or compassionate political stance towards people of color. So, you know, that can then align people with the notion that, hey, I'm your guy. See what I'm doing? You know, I'm stating it as a fact that I'm putting a person of color on my ticket to engender myself to you, as well as making you kind of guilting you into supporting me, because if you don't support me, you're not really being black. Trump, on the other hand, has made the comment, as the gentleman pointed out, where he called out our Hispanic brothers from Mexico, brothers and sisters from Mexico, to say that these people are bad, we shouldn't let them in the border, and, you know, let's build a wall, and the rhetoric that came along with that campaign speech when he first was running for office. He then went on to comment about the nations of Haiti, the Caribbean, and from Africa, calling them S-hole countries. We'd much rather have people come from Europe. So that's directly pandering to a white supremacist mentality that America is for white folks, or people of European ancestry, as opposed to folks coming from quote-unquote third world impoverished communities where they lack civilization and culture. So, you know, playing on those themes has created a divide. And that was the point I was making earlier, that both Republican and Democrat want people to be divided and not come together, so that the corporate structure, the oligarchs of this country, the empire, the imperialists, they can continue to maintain their control over our behavior through the policies that come out of Washington, D.C., or the local governments. And as long as we are stuck in the question of race, we can't get past that, to the point of saying we need to hold the institutions that deal with the economics and finances of our daily lives to be more accountable for the human cause, to make sure that we have future for our kids, that we get past race to see each other as one family, brother, sister, no matter what language you speak, what color you are, no matter where your ancestors came from.
Thank you. Thanks for your very valuable contribution today. I appreciate it. Chris from West Palm Beach, you're on the air. Good afternoon. Do you have the question understood? How have Donald Trump and Joe Biden used race for political advantage, and still are using race for political advantage? Go ahead.
Trump has used race a little bit less, in my opinion, recently. Obviously, as the prior two callers said, you know, he made those comments, he said those things. You know, on some level, though, what Trump, he believes that to be real. So while I don't agree, nor do I like his comments, he kept it real to himself, whereas the way the Democrats use race is extremely disingenuous and on a more dangerous level, because in the cities that compromise the largest groups of non-white people, Democrats are the party that hold the levers of power. Nothing has materially benefited us under their regime. I just look at Kamala Harris, for instance. I don't know if you saw her comment yesterday. She totally took Martin Luther King's speech, passage from his quote, and she made it her own, another lie. She's the only one, ironically, who is pandering to black people and doing such a horrible job at it. If she was a white woman, they'd be calling her Karen up and left and right. So the Democrats, to me, are the ones that are using race in the worst ways. And it's apparent when you're not a Democrat or a Republican, it becomes very easy just to to offer an analysis that's not biased. You know, you're just calling it for what you see. And the Democrats, what they're doing is just absolutely disgusting.
Beyond this election, do you see it as having a rippling effect into whoever is next?
On some level, and I think it's broken down by generation, too, and maybe by region. But, you know, I'm just under 40 years old. And my age group and a little bit younger, we tend to look at this thing like nobody has our interests at heart. An older generation is still Republicans racist, Democrats less racist. And so going forward, it will still be broken down amongst those lines, but the younger people may either decide to check out, or even some may even vote Republican going forward. Under this coronavirus thing, if you're a business owner and they're threatening you with shutdowns, largely what the Democrats want to do under this, if you're a business owner and you're struggling, you may hate the Republicans and the things they stand for, but at the very least, they seem to be more willing to allow you to conduct your business, whereas Democrats really just want to shut everything down. And that's going to have a major effect on the non-major businesses, such as a Walmart or Target. You know, they'll be okay, but, you know, the Utrecht Lead pizza shop or the Utrecht Lead, you know, whatever store, you're struggling. So yeah. Based on economics alone, there may be a shift.
Do you think, just the same, even with the lame arguments and the clearly, I mean, it's so patently clear what they're doing in all these different instances, some of which you've pointed out, are they convincing people about their genuine interest in having a whole society?
No, I don't. Not from the parties. No, not at all. I largely see the Democrats and Republicans as one entity, both existing to confuse each group of Americans that support them. So, no, I don't.
I don't. Okay.
I just don't. You know it too. I mean, you know, we're having a discussion. I understand, but you know it too. That's why you're laughing now.
I love that political comment. Thank you, Chris. Thanks for contributing.
Thank you,
Therese.
Have a good one.
Bye bye. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht.
Ed, are you
How
there?
You
oh, there you are.
You can hear me? How you doing?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, pertaining to your question as far as race and how it was used by these two political pundits, for want of a better word, Donald Trump did the classic move. Race has always been an issue in this country since 1605, when the first official slave ship got here. And the Angela Project, it's always been a bone of contention, and it's just another word for class. It's a class by color designation. Trump played upon the fears of the common, quote-unquote, white man in America. He played upon the fact that there had been a black president. He played upon the fact of American Caucasian exceptionalism. He's a white man. He's a businessman. He can use those powers to, or those fictitious powers to elevate and make America great again. He played. He also used the Nixon strategy as far as with immigrants, as far as the caravan that was approaching the border, and all of the criminal elements that were allegedly in the caravan. That's what he used. Biden was chosen. Biden was the chosen acolyte to represent the resistance to Trump. And Biden used the fear that Trump instilled in the African-American community, the old African-American community from back in the days of Bull Connor and segregation. to the younger African-American community with the questions about race and our place in American society. So they both played off of those dynamics. Biden used the fear factor and, you know, being the lesser of two evils or the evil of two lessers, and Trump used the quote-unquote Caucasian-American exceptionalism to bolster his successful ascent to the White House and to try and counterbalance in this defeat in this election. It's always the same, but no one looks at the record. I always go back with Helen Carlick. I say, I don't care what you say, it's what you do. Joe Biden is the author of the crime bill. Joe Biden is the author of the changes to bankruptcy laws that limit your ability to clear up your debt by filing bankruptcy. Joe Biden represents the credit card companies and the medical companies. We've got to grow up. We've got to become politically astute. We've got to use our minds and get away from the emotional personality game that this hierarchy puts us in. And it's always the same. How can you look past Joe Biden? How can you look past the leopard and not see the spots?
What do you think will happen once this immediate issue that the nation seems to be transfixed by, and that is, oh, is the election going to be overturned? Will Trump prevail? Whatever the outcome, what purpose would it serve in terms of the intention that you outlined from the beginning of how the candidates propose to use race?
Well, I mean, this is basically a dog and pony show. They don't have the numbers to make any to turn anything as far as the Electoral College or the election is concerned. So this is just a show. What the Republican Party is deciding now is, are they going to be identified with Trump for the rest of their political lives in this country, or are they going to step away from Trump and become the Republican Party? The Republican Party right now is identified with Trump. They are his party. That's why these people are falling on their sword, as it were, to make this representation to those 74 million people that still voted for Trump. So the Republican Party can't disassociate itself from Trump. I know the old guard would like to, in my opinion, because they don't want Trump to suck all the air out of the room. But the younger and newer Republicans, they stand behind him because a lot of people still are enamored with this man. No matter what you think of his mental state, no matter what you think of his character, no matter what you think of his criminal activities, there are still people that buy in the myth of American exceptionalism. Just like the gun won the West, just like everybody pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps, there's a large segment of this population that believe that myth and need it to survive. And he embodies that right now. So, I mean, in the future, the next presidential race, he's got a foothold in the Republican Party. And the only way that the if the Democrats are smart, let them take the way for it. Trump is responsible for death. Trump is responsible for millions of deaths with the COVID-19. He's responsible. If the Republicans want to take that week, they're responsible for it too. They're representing him. They're falling on their sword for this guy. Meanwhile, hundreds of thousands, millions of people have died and are in a financial rut because of this man and his politics, because of his ignoring of this virus. This virus is going to play a lot into the future. It's going to be in the minds of people for years to come, because we're not out of this yet. And this is going to play a pivotal role in politics in this country in the future.
Thank you. Thank you, Ed, for your comprehensive overview today. Thanks a lot. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
So I'm going to get right to your question. I'm going to say formed as a slaveholding republic that had intentions of imperialism all over the world. And this signature way of controlling this country has been white supremacy racism, using the difference in phenotype of different people. And all the people are of the same species, but with the different phenotype. Now, getting right to the point, the ruling class is absolutely racist. That's a signature thing. And if you're going to be president, you have to be very involved with the concept, this false concept of race. And Biden and Trump are certainly in that category of racism. Now, as I see it, the reason that Biden has gotten a pass on the racist thing or racist part, they talk about Trump but not about Biden, is simple. And as I see it, the ruling class, the real rulers, the ones that run the place, have decided they prefer Biden over Trump. And that's why Biden is getting the pass as far as the media is concerned. And that's the reason, because they have decided they'll take Biden over Trump. So that, to me, is the answer why Biden is getting the kind of pass like he is getting.
Should he be confronted, though? And will he be confronted, in your view, on his waffling on race?
Waffling? Did you say waffling on race?
Yes.
Well, he once he gets in there, he's going to do some waffling on certain things, and I'm sure he'll give some signals out to the phenotype white people that he's one of them. I mean, because he wants to stay in power, and when you think about it, most phenotype white people voted for Trump, and he might try to win some of them over. And black folks have nowhere to go, that they see themselves as unable to go anywhere, so he's got them in check, and he's going to make some moves that shows that he's one of the good old boys. So that's the way I see it.
Thank you, David. We could always depend on you to tell us as it is, the way you see it. Thank you so much. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Trees, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
Oh, it's going okay. Hanging in there.
Good. That's good. Good news.
I am glad your show right today is batting 1,000. I mean, all of the callers have been, you know, basically on point with a lot of things in regards to this question that you're asking. And I'm going to have to steal some of these, some of the stuff that had already been mentioned. But in regards to the using of race between these two people, Trump and Biden, you know, for me, it's first about pandering. And secondly, it's about policy. So you saw examples of both Biden and Trump, you know, doing the pandering. So you had Trump, who tried to pander to specifically African-American or black American people in regards to his so-called, quote, policy to undo Biden's policy of, you know, mass incarceration by, you know, letting a few black people out, or maybe one black person out, I don't know. But, you know, him pandering to, you know, that particular sphere of non-white people. And then you have Biden, who, on the other hand, particularly panders to One specific denomination, group of non-white people in regards to, immigrants, particularly people from South America or the Caribbean, or even black women, when, you try to prop up Kamala Harris as, the progressive person that he chose as vice president. But I think both of them, kind of use that to their advantage because of the fact that a lot of us are still kind of confused about racism. And many people think that racism is just about black people and white people, or it's about, black people and some immigrants. But when you're talking about race and racism, which is a, which is a fairly new concept when you're talking about human history, because, 600 years ago, people weren't classified as race. And it's a concept and a construct that was, started by white Europeans. And so when you're talking about race, in a general term, you're talking about white people and non-white people. And when we're talking about non-white people, we're talking about black, brown, yellow, red, those type of people. So when you look at both of them, and I think your second caller brought this point up that I thought about when it comes to the divide and conquer aspect of race. And both of these candidates use that divide and conquer aspect to kind of let the non-white people, battle it out and put those dividing lines between them, because of the fact that, when Trump tried to pander to, say, African Americans, and particularly black men, by letting out, a couple of black people out of prison and saying that, black people built this country, it's almost like he's pandering to him, but what policies are you putting in place to have African-American men, who are one of the most highest unemployed people when you're talking about gender and race, and you've been in office for all this time and you still haven't given black men, the jobs that they need and the ability to hold families and to just be men. And then you got Biden, who doesn't want to talk about reparations, and he basically kind of shuns the African-American community over trying to cater to other non-white people.
How do you think this would work out? Let's say the good fortune is with Biden, and he is determined to be the legitimate winner of this election. How would all these racial attitudes, or will they change? Not how, but do you see them changing in Biden, from what to what?
Well, I don't see it. I see it changing, but I'm seeing it change from bad to worse under Biden. What I see is, like I said, Biden has a specific division amongst non-white people. And, like I mentioned before, and I believe either the first or second caller had mentioned this in regards to putting hard divisions among non-white people, and particularly, African-Americans or black Americans, because we seem to take the brunt of a lot of things. And under the Biden administration and under Biden's policies, we see that, we're the most incarcerated people in this country. And, we have the highest unemployment. We have all of this and all of that. And then there's policies in place that, even though, they're kind of menial, but there are at least some policies in place that take care of non-white immigrants, particularly from South America, or, even from Africa to Asia, that helps them out. But then at the same time, we have, African Americans who have generations of people here, and we can't get anything like that of what the immigrants have. But this is all, like I said, putting a hard division amongst, you know, non-white people. And finally, in the end, both of these people, Trump and Biden, are basically putting policies in place and saying, hey, if you want to live in this white country, you're going to have to, you know, rule under us. Because obviously,
if you want to live in what did you just say? If you want to live in what country?
If you want to live in this white country, you're going to have to live under these white rules. And it, only because of the fact that, you know, with the census saying that by 2030, I think, the white people will be the numerical minority, and they're basically getting ready for that.
Wow. Thanks, Henry. Thanks for your contribution today. I got to tell you, I agree with you. We're getting some serious education here today. I hope people understand that. Thank you so much. Mohammed from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Good afternoon.
As always, I sincerely hope your health continues to improve.
Thank you.
Talk about racism and then race. Racism, and most people don't fully understand it, but they will after today. Racism is control, domination, exploitation, manipulation, deceit, hating, envy.
Okay, hold on before you go any further. You're off base already. The question is, well, I'm about to explain. The question posed today is, how have Donald Trump and Joe Biden used race for political advantage in their presidential campaigns? You could save us all some time by getting to the question. You don't need to take us the scenic route around what is race, what constitutes racism, and so forth. That's for another discussion. But let us suppose that people have been following this presidential campaign very closely, and they've come to have some opinions about it, especially, although it may not have been expressed publicly, but they have some feelings about this question, missing question, on race and these two candidates. What is your feeling?
Okay. Trump used it in the sense that a lot of Europeans, not white people, Europeans, they're pink in color, really. Most people don't fully understand that. They became sort of feel like they had been disenfranchised in the sense first when Obama became president because he was a person of color. So what Trump did is he played to that base where they were saying, we came over here, we conquered these people, we took their land, and now a person of color is a president. So what he did is he had Google tune into the calls of people, Europeans for the most part, to find out what their sense of concerns were about the presidency and leadership of the country. So they told them one was the immigrants coming in, the so-called black people having arose to positions that they should have had. And what he was catering to is the poor or the lower class sort of Europeans. So they felt disempowered with a so-called black or brown person being in there. So he basically appealed to that particular base. Biden is a guy that supported that crime bill, and he just undercoverly represents that ruling class. Trump and Obama don't really run anything. It's that what they call a deep state that really run it, and they just take orders from them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. But before you go, how do you prove that last point of yours, that both Trump and Biden are being run by an invisible hand?
Eutrice, the country is really run by the Bilderberg Group, Council on Foreign Relations.
No. You're not going to take us there. I'm asking you to prove it. Don't repeat it, because I've read a lot of, you know, the deep state and all of that kind of stuff, which is interesting. Okay. But how do you legitimately make that claim simply by repeating other claims that have been proven to be false?
Which ones have been proven to be false?
The Bilderberg Group and, you know, the hidden powers behind politics in the United States. When you make a charge like that,
mm-hmm.
you should be able to prove it.
Okay.
Because if you don't prove it, you're engaging yourself in propaganda. And that's not what we want to do. We want people to have information. So if you have information that backs up your contention, let's hear it.
Okay. I said this in 2008 when Obama was running for president. The Bilderberg Group called him to Chantilly, Virginia, and they gave him an agenda. When he came back,
Mm-hmm. How do you know that to be true?
All we had, you remember Daniel Estulin, the true story of the Bilderberg Group?
No.
Remember Frederick Hoffman, Charles?
No, I'm saying these are people that you're citing. Where overall are the facts? Where can we get these facts independently and evaluate them?
Okay. You can go to, it's a CD out there called The True Story of the Bilderberg Group by Daniel Estulin. Now, back in 2008, Earl Caldwell was telling us about how the so-called racism came about. Charles Davenport and Frederick Hoffman, they had to justify why the Constitution says that all men are created equal. So the people would say, well, if all men are created equal, why are you treating these so-called blacks like that? They say they're three-fifths of a man. But like as I said a little earlier, this so-called racism is domination, control, manipulation, hate, envy. The hate and envy is this for the poor people at the bottom to feel like the so-called blacks and brown people and all the different other groups are taking something from them. So that's the group that Trump used that's backing him up, that particular group. They feel like they want
to disenfranchise. Well, we don't know these things to be true. We know that they've mm-hmm. been said. We know that people have made, contentions that these things, in fact, are true. But,
Let me just say this. The people that really run this country, and you can always tell by the dominant language, the same people that they were the serfs and the lords over in England, they treated them worse than they treat the people here. Those were all European people. Those were the people at the bottom. They treated them worse or just as bad as they treat the different, how would you say it, ethnic groups as they do right here. And these same people brought that stuff over here.
But you might be missing a very crucial distinction, and it is
okay.
It is not necessarily race, because they all had the same kind of phenotype, to quote David from Brooklyn.
Okay.
But it might have been a class issue. It might have been other kinds of cultural issues. It might have been a lot of complicated things that overlapped. And therefore, yes.
Okay, race is a false construct. We are groups, not races. Races is something that have a beginning point and an ending point. These are groups, not races.
Well, we're gonna talk about race soon in this sense, because yes, it is a false construct, but mm-hmm. it is real in its application. And it has been monumentally effective in its application, even as a false construct. So just simply to say, well, it is a false construct, doesn't dismiss the centrality of race to international struggles. And there's the music, which means we're done. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for contributing so meaningfully today. I'm always proud to sit at your feet and learn a thing or two. So we'll hook up again with each other tomorrow. Thanks for contributing and listening today. Bye-bye.